The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Isn't it a wild coincidence that on the day the United States Supreme Court delivered quite the smackdown to Bob Ferguson, for the first time in months, he can't find a microphone. Well, he's off on a family camping trip and is not available for comment. Let's get right to our top story.
The Big Lead. Top story.
So Bob Ferguson has been bragging for months and months and months about the 5, 10, 50, 20, up to 27 lawsuits now that he has filed against the Trump administration. And the latest one that has get national attention. And technically, this is not the Washington State lawsuit against the travel ban, but it is one that was filed by Hawaii, but it was similar to the Washington one. As you know, President Trump, he said, hey, I promised during the campaign, during the election, and after I became president, I would promise that I would work on our national security. And so they took several countries that had been identified by the Barack Obama administration as the prime sponsors of terrorism in the world. And the Trump administration said, we want to do more extensive vetting before we allow people from the primary terror sponsoring nations into the United States. And what Bob Ferguson and Jay Inslee, with all of their grandstanding, because they needed attention, because Jay Inslee needs to get a microphone so he can be president in 2020. I'm still looking forward to those Inslee-Trump debates. Please, Lord, bring us some Inslee-Trump debates. But they talked about how it was unconstitutional and it was a Muslim ban. That's what they said. It's a Muslim ban. And people say, well, wait a second. The biggest Muslim population country in the world is Indonesia, and Indonesia isn't on the list. Saudi Arabia isn't on the list. Most populous Middle Eastern Muslim nation. If the most populous Muslim nations in parts of the world are not on the list, how can this be a Muslim travel ban? But they went to the most overturned court in the country. The radically leftist Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. And, of course, they issued the injunction and said, okay, we're on the side of Bob Ferguson and Hawaii's AG. And we will injunct the travel ban. Well, it went to the U.S. Supreme Court today. And they, in a 5-4 decision, said that, yes, the president of the United States, as we all know, and you'll recall, when Bob Ferguson first filed this lawsuit, we had legal experts on this show who said there is no way Bob Ferguson wins this on appeal before the U.S. Supreme Court. There's no way. Because the president of the United States has broad discretionary powers on how to protect the citizens of the United States. Well, Jay Inslee this afternoon, oh man, he's issued a statement. He is whining and crying about this. It's abhorrent. The majority of the Supreme Court justices have turned a blind eye to the president's own words and our country's constitutional protections against discrimination. Well, that was the bizarre ruling by the Ninth Circuit, where they said that things Trump said on the campaign trail, where there is an awful lot of hyperbole that is always put forth by every candidate on the campaign trail. And they said, even though that rhetoric is not part of the travel ban, it's not codified, they made this bizarre, twisted, and see, I'm not enough of a legal scholar to know this, but I talked to experts on the show who educated me on this. And they said that it is a bizarre decision by the Ninth Circuit Court to say, we're going to take words that a candidate said on the campaign trail, and we're going to use that as a reason to strike down this travel ban by the president of the United States months and months and months later. And so everyone I talked to said, of course, when this goes to the U.S. Supreme Court, no way does the injunction stand up. And yes, the president's travel ban will stand up. But Jay Inslee is blasting this as racist. We have a statement from Bob Ferguson, who's on a family camping trip, and he said he's trying to distance himself from this. Washington State was not a party. Washington State successfully defeated the Trump administration's original travel ban. The Trump administration chose not to appeal our victory to the Supreme Court and paid our court costs. And he says that this Supreme Court decision today is a different state's appeal. But no, it's obvious that Donald Trump has prevailed over the grandstanding of Bob Ferguson. Bob Ferguson, you talk, oh, I'm undefeated. 27 lawsuits against the Trump administration. And I'm undefeated. Because Bob Ferguson thinks that's going to get him to be governor when Inslee becomes president. Oh, man, that'll be the day. That'll be the day. So, I think it's good news that the president of the United States is able to order in countries where there's not enough paper trail, not enough history with people who want to travel here, that we can have heightened vetting of people who come to the United States from the primary terrorism-sponsoring countries in the world. That's a victory today by the U.S. Supreme Court. And so, great news. Good to see Bob Ferguson. Just shocked that he's off camping today after this smackdown from the U.S. Supreme Court. Next up in the Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Bizarro World.
Yeah, and we are in Bizarro World here. I talked a couple hours ago about the murder in Seattle's Pioneer Square yesterday morning, 4 a.m. A guy was stabbed to death. And what we found out today, our reporter Hannah Scott got information about how, as have the folks over at Channel 4, ComoNews.com, because I have some audio from them, that if there is a medical emergency in Pioneer Square or near Pioneer Square, Seattle Fire would always send out two people in the response crew. Now they have to send at least four, sometimes six, because otherwise they cannot ensure the safety of the responding paramedics. It's become that much of a war zone down in Pioneer Square. Assistant Fire Chief Brian Hastings told Channel 4, ComoNews.com, that the dangers have skyrocketed.
They've got their head on a swivel looking around. The call volume's gone up, but the complexity of the calls has gone up tremendously. It's a different world. Our volume is so high that they need to be prepared to get on the next run. In order to finish this run, they need to be safe. They need to get out of there unharmed, and they need to take care of the patient at the level that we've come to expect.
Or, as Mayor Jenny Durkin would say,
it's a safe place.
The assistant chief might disagree with you, Mayor. He says they have to take all of these extra precautions.
What we're trying to express to the firefighters, it is better to conservatively call police than to wait and see if it can play out.
Or, as Jenny Durkin might say,
it's a safe place.
And Channel 4, Como reported on a story the captain used as an example of police having to help them out.
Hastings points to an incident in May where a King County Sheriff's SWAT team used ballistics shields to help Seattle firefighters fight a house fire where bullets were going off.
Or,
it's a safe place.
Yeah, and they have to use Seattle police a lot now when they are responding to medical calls.
Call police, and police are so happy to come and help us out. And oftentimes they get there and they can de-escalate it very quickly because of the force that comes in.
I just can't believe how deep in the sand Jenny Durkin's head is about how dangerous it's gotten around the city. I mean, if your own first responders are telling you we can't even do medical response calls now unless we have six of us on the call or police backup for a medical response, Jenny Durkin is not a leader. Well, she's a leader down on the Texas-Mexico border. She's fantastic there. All right, next up in the big lead.
The Big Lead, Dory Monson Show exclusive.
I had a chance to talk a couple of hours ago with Mark and Kim Holinsky. They are the parents of Tyler Holinsky, the Washington State Cougar quarterback who inexplicably in January committed suicide, used a firearm to kill himself. This is a guy who was described by everybody who knew him as such a bright, shining light. And when I talked with his mom, Kim, a couple of months ago, she didn't have any answers. There were problems with a girlfriend and, you know, he was bummed out about that. But nothing that would rise to the level of a young man with such a bright future taking his own life. Well, in a rather shocking new detail, Tyler Holinsky's brain autopsy revealed that he had early stage of CTE, the brain injury that is most commonly associated with NFL players. Aaron Hernandez, the New England Patriots tight end, who committed murder and then in prison committed suicide. He had a severe case of CTE. Junior Seau, the San Diego linebacker, Hall of Famer, committed suicide. He, too, had CTE. Tyler was in the early stages. He had what's called phase one, so the earliest stage of CTE. A couple of hours ago, I had a chance to talk to his mom and dad about it. What does phase one mean?
You know, for neither Kim nor I are medical experts for sure. And we've had the very difficult task of trying to learn from a lay perspective without a medical background on that stuff. So this is a father talking,
sure.
First of all. But state, you know, there's my understanding is that there's three stages. As an example, Hernandez from the Patriots had his brain tested. He was CTE stage three. I'm unfamiliar with, you know, or less familiar with some of the others that have been publicly talked about. But CTE, if there's such a thing as mild, he had a mild form or the first stage, the first.
Okay.
That's what CT stage one indicates.
And Kim,
now they also,
go ahead.
Sorry. Well, I was just going to say that they also said that that his brain resembled more of a 60-year-old or 60-plus-year-old from the medical examiner's office than what she would expect or she has seen in normal 21-year-old athletes.
And in the course of our conversation, his mom and dad said they don't know if this is why Tyler took his life. They said there are, you know, certainly other reasons that may have been involved. But one of the things that struck me as we were talking, and one of the things I was curious about, did they have any bitterness toward the sport of football? I don't hear a lot of bitterness toward football. I'm not hearing that in your voices. Is there?
Oh, you know what? That's a great question and a good catch. It's a complex question. There's no bitterness towards football, the sport. There's a lot of disappointment, of course, in our lives. We're missing, you know, the brightest star on the planet as we're concerned, as we are concerned. But we're not blaming football. We have three kids that played football. I think the math sort of makes everybody sit up and wonder. You know, there's millions of kids that have played football for 90 years that have gone through all this, and this wasn't an outcome for them. And so there's no bitterness there. That's one part of it. And we have a 17-year-old who's an awfully good quarterback and an another amazing, you know, child, and he's continuing to play. And I think what it is, Dory, for us is it's a risk, like a lot of sports, you know, it's a risk that we have to, as a family and as individual players and individual families, sort of assess. And the position, you know, the point that we're at now, looking back on Tyler, it's very, while it's very difficult, we understand that we're looking through the lens of two parents that lost their child, two brothers that lost their middle brother. And so everything's a little distorted. We don't know. I mean, the hit in the Arizona game, certainly the hits he took when he was playing Pop Warner, et cetera. We're going to continue to study and learn from it. But I think that's right. The bitterness is suppressed because of the sadness. I mean, at the end of the day, this is confusing to us and it's upsetting and all those things, but it's really overridden by just, you know, missing this wonderful child.
And I'm so impressed with Tyler's parents. They just sound like wonderful people who are dealing with the greatest grief any human being can possibly endure. And you heard what they said. Tyler's 17-year-old brother is playing football and, you know, very talented, is highly touted college, wants to be a college quarterback. And I asked him, what about your grandchildren? Would you want them to play? Would you feel okay about them playing football too?
Well, I hope that's a ways away. and that only matters, I mean, in this sense, it only matters that I think there's a lot of resources being poured into the study of CTE at the moment. And I think that's probably today. I would say that it feels like what we're learning is maybe starting them a little later than starting them at, you know, 5 and 6 years old might be a positive thing. I would wait to get, you know, all the available information at that time before making that decision. Of course, now I would move heaven and earth and trade anything to have Tyler back, including, you know, never introducing them to football or discouraging them or whatever. But that's, you know, that's a unique situation in our case. But I think, you know, having all the right having the most up-to-date information is what would drive that decision.
Yeah. They are just focused now on getting Tyler's story out there. And we pledged that we would stay in touch and always offer them a platform.
And we said early on in our kind of message back to the community that we promised then and will continue to honor that as we find out and learn more about this and what happened to Tyler, we'll share it as openly as we can and see if that doesn't help all of us deal with it a little better.
Okay. All right. Well, we will indeed stay in touch. Kim and Mark Kalinske, God bless both of you and all three of your boys, and I appreciate you coming on with me this afternoon.
Thank you, Dory.
Great.
Hey,
thanks
and
so much, Dory.
Yes.
Thank you for saying three of your boys. That means a lot.
I meant that very sincerely. If you want more information on how Tyler's memory lives on, HilinskiesHope.org. HILINSKIS. HilinskiesHope.org. That is your big lead this hour.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
Ursula's going to check the notes, then we'll count down our favorite sound bites of the day. And by the way, go listen. They were on with us for a half hour in the noon hour. Go check out our podcast and listen to the entire interview with that unbelievably strong set of parents, Mark and Kim Halinski. Lots more straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show. So let me get this straight. They're shutting down traffic in downtown Seattle, protesters at the federal courthouse.
Apparently,
the federal building,
yes.
Federal building.
It could be, yes, exactly. So the federal building, federal courthouse, and it's on Fifth Avenue.
Because
and
they're 1,000... upset about the United States Supreme Court ruling that came down earlier today about the travel ban.
Yeah, that's one of the things.
In Washington, D.C.
It's also part of this movement that's against ICE. So there are also people protesting ICE. But most of the signs that I saw in the pictures from our news partner, Cairo 7, is most of them are saying they are upset about the Supreme Court decision today.
So are they hopeful that somehow word of their protest in downtown Seattle is they stop traffic on Fifth Avenue. Somehow, word of their complaint will waft slowly across the country to the halls of justice in Washington, D.C., and that the Supreme Court justices will start calling each other and say, hey, Clarence, it's Gorsuch. Out in Seattle, they're upset by our decision today. Why don't we flip our votes and make the people in Seattle happy?
Either that or it just makes them feel better to know that they are protesting and they're letting their voices be heard about something they don't like.
Nice. All right. But I'm hopeful that once Clarence and Gorsuch, I'm not sure who the other three on the majority were. I'm just guessing that they were among the five. But I'm hopeful that once they hear about this Seattle protest, that it will completely overturn today's carefully considered Supreme Court ruling on the travel ban. So well done, protesters of Seattle. Well done. You've done it again. And with that as a mere prelude, let's get to our favorite sound bites of the day.
This is Dory Monson's awesome audio clips of the day.
Jerry Seinfeld is speaking out about Roseanne's firing, and he does not think she should have been fired.
Number three.
I think they should get another Roseanne. They brought Dan Conner back. He was dead, right? And they just brought him back. So why can't we get another Roseanne? There's other funny women that could do that part. You need to get the comic in there. I hate to see a comic lose a job. I didn't see why it was necessary to fire her. Why would you murder someone who's committing suicide? Yeah, that had to be. But I never saw somebody end their entire career with one button push. That was fresh.
It happens. One button push can blow it all up. At number two, here's the love and tolerance of the left. Trevor Noah, and I never watch The Daily Show. And again, not about his politics. I just don't find him funny. I think John Oliver, I record John Oliver's show every week. He's politically very different from me. But it's a great, well-produced, well-done show. I feel nothing of that about Trevor Noah. And here's an example. Trevor Noah talking about Sarah Huckabee being kicked out of the restaurant. And he says, here's what the waiters just should have done to her food.
Number two.
When you think about it, asking Sanders to leave was probably the nicest thing they could have done. The waiter was probably like, listen, if I'm being honest, all the chefs are your food right now. So if I were you, I'd go get a pizza at one of those places where you can watch them make it. Yeah.
And the word we had to bleep was a word about male sexual fluids. And that's humor to the left. That got applause that they should do that in Sarah Sanders' food, which might be why people have gotten sick of fake news people like CNN's Jim Acosta.
Number one.
At the Trump rally last night. About CNN at those rallies. All right, those are our favorite sound bites of the day. Today's sign next. And down the stretch we come. What a day, what a show, what a show, what a day. All right, before we head out into the Tuesday afternoon, it's time for today's edition of
Today's Sign that the end is near.
I'm going to make this today's sign triple shot, if I have time to get all three in. My brain works in a really strange way. I can remember the entire starting lineup, all the bench players, and I think the entire pitching rotation, maybe the entire pitching staff, of the 1970 Baltimore Orioles. But I can read a book or see a movie, and a couple of years later, I have no memory of it. Which is kind of nice if I love a book, because a few years later, it's like reading it for the first time all over again. I never read fiction when I was a kid or a young man. Never read fiction. And because the Seattle Public Schools were even worse then than they are now, I was never required to read any classic works of fiction. So I just never read a fiction book. And then I started, I don't know, 25, 30 years ago, whenever A View to a Kill, John Grisham. And I thought, I'll try a fiction book. And I ended up loving John Grisham novels. And the one that I loved the very most was called The Testament. And it's about one of the richest men in the world, and he commits suicide, and his kids were all a disaster from three marriages. And he leaves his fortune to one of his seven children, an illegitimate daughter who had become a Christian missionary in the remote jungles and swampland, the Pantanal of South America. So I just reread The Testament last week, and it was about an attorney who had to go find this woman in the middle of nowhere with, you know, tribes people who hadn't had electricity or running water in their lives. They were living in the Stone Age. And all she had to do was sign these papers to become the richest woman in the world, $11 billion. And if you want to read it, I'm not going to tell you how it ends. But I thought about it when I heard this news story today about this elderly Japanese man who's been living naked on a secluded island for 29 years. He would only venture out for water, rice cakes, and supplies once a week. But now, Masafumi Nagasaki is 82 years old, and he's being forced back into civilization. He's been living by himself since 1989. Reuters did a profile on the naked hermit in 2012, and that brought him some unwanted attention. He says that he just wants to die on this island that's been his home for so long. He said, finding a place to die is an important thing to do, and I've decided here is the place for me. But now, and nobody really knows how he got to this deserted island, but now somebody saw him, and he said that he looked sickly. And now he is being forced back into civilization. A blogger who spent 5 days with him said he's being kicked out of the island. Somebody saw him on the island, and it seems like he was weak. They called the police, and they took him back to civilization, and that's it. He couldn't even fight back because he was so weak. They won't allow him to return to the island on which he wanted to die. He had a bad case of the flu. When you're 89 years old, that can be deadly. The guy who saw him said his health is okay. He was probably only sick or had the flu, but they won't allow him to go back anymore. He cannot go there. It's over. And there certainly is a lot of that that's very sad that somebody, but maybe it's a wonderful spiritual thing. I can't imagine that. But who'd want to be alone with themselves if you're me? Let's face it. But if somebody chooses to die there, let them die there, crying out loud. But this guy's going to be forced back into civilization. He's going to have to die among the masses. He was a business owner. He said he got sick of how mean people were. Now, he also has kids. So he maybe wasn't the greatest father in the world, but there aren't details about that. But anyway, the naked hermit who's wanted to die on a deserted island has been forced back into civilization. Today's science story number two, how about this for a good scam? At a Vancouver street festival, a vendor who calls himself a foodie troller, he claimed his special water had health benefits. Now, the water bottles had a real hot dog inside. He said that it was keto compatible. And he was selling these bottles of water with a hot dog inside for $38 Canadian per bottle, $28 U.S. Now, he knew that there was no health benefit. What he said on his blog, if you got all the way to the fine print, hot dog water in its absurdity hopes to encourage critical thinking related to product marketing and the significant role it can play in our purchasing choices. But he said several people at his booth at the street fair bought the water. And that's all it was. Water with a hot dog inside of it. A water bottle. $38 a bottle. So is he a scam artist for that? Or is it good occasionally to just reveal the deep stupidity of consumers? Okay, and finally, today's signed story number three. It's tough finding clean Kanye music. How about when he collaborated with Estelle? I like this song. A couple of months ago, Kanye West tweeted his support of President Trump. He now says,
Estelle, we about to get down.
There he is.
In the world right now, just touched down in London town. Bet they give me a pound. Tell them put the money in my hand right now. Got a promoter, we need more seats. We just sold out all the floor seats.
Take me on a trip, I'd like to go somewhere.
Well, in a lengthy interview with the New York Times, Kanye West says that he felt immense pressure to support Hillary Clinton. He said that after he came out supporting Donald Trump, he had his bleeping bleep castrated. He said, you have to like Hillary. That has to be your choice. He then said he was speaking out because he thinks Trump offers some things, especially for black people with record low unemployment rate. He says he knew some people in the celebrity world who voted for Trump, but they were scared to admit it. And he said, I'm not scared to say what I like. Let me come over here and get in this fight with you. But he says that the world wants to castrate him since he came out as a Trump supporter. Poor guy. That just adds to his list of problems. Okay, I got to get out of here. I have said everything that I have to say for today. But you know what? I'm going to go home. I'm going to think up a bunch of new stuff. And you'll hear those thoughts on the big show tomorrow. Rod and Dodd's coming up next. And I will see you back here tomorrow. High noon.
Sneakers looking fresh to death. I'm loving those show toes. Walking that walk, talk that slick talk. Liking this American boy, American boy. Take me on a trip, I'd like to go someday. Take me to your.
How can I have 1 point, you know, 9 million followers and feel this alone?
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You're really a fantastic audience.